Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.
Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Hollow is here to help. Hollow is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Hollow has something for everyone. Hollow is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.hollow.app/breadbox.
Today, I am here to give you the assurance that I have not forgotten you.
If we want to see the new evangelization become more than just jargon, if we want to see it grow legs and gain traction and change the world, we have got to take seriously our responsibilities as husbands and fathers, and especially as sons of God.
I want to propose to you then that something that our world is desperately in need of in the midst of this crisis is Catholic Christian masculinity.
If you want to be a good father, then bring your children to confession with you.
I can't get there unless I become a man of ascesis, a man of asceticism, a man of training.
A man not doing penance, a man not disciplined, is not a man.
You guys have upped your game.
You know what, guys, I gotta say, I love this the concept of Man Show.
Warning, the Catholic Man Show is about to begin.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side. So raise your glass. Adam Minahan here, sitting in studio with David Nye, the Don David.
See.
And our good friend coming back for round two. We had him on about a year ago to date, almost probably exactly.
Very close.
Very close. Brandon, it's great to have you back on the Catholic Man Show. Thanks for hanging out with us again this evening.
It is great to be here. Thanks
and we also have me. Eli in...
Mr. Eli Stone, the Diocese of Tulsa in eastern Oklahoma.
He works for the Alcuin Institute.
There you go.
He is here with us as well. So, Brandon, for those who may not know who you are or may have not caught our last episode, which I will link in our show notes, but a little bit of background on who you are and who your family and where you're from and all that kind of fun stuff.
My name is Brandon Sheard. I think we covered that. Mm-hmm. I am from Washington State. I live on an island with my family. I have seven children and my wife, Lauren, and we have a business. It's called Farmstead Meatsmith. And we practice what I like to think of as peasant Catholic agrarian domestic culture.
I'm a professional peasant.
Something like that. Basically, I'm a butcher, so I harvest animals for a living.
Okay.
And I really started doing this in order to feed my family the best way I knew how.
Mm-hmm. Literally. Mm-hmm. Literally feed them.
Truly, yes. Because come to find out, when you go back a few steps on the processing line to the beginnings, things are effortlessly delicious and more nutritious.
Sorry. His mic is out.
Oh.
Keep going. You're good.
Okay. I can hear it. Oh, ooh.
It's on. Look, it's being recorded.
Okay.
Yeah. No, keep going. Turn it down. That's too loud.
I didn't really move.
I can hear it in my head, Wuffins.
Yeah.
That's what my 2-year-old calls these.
Yeah. So keep. Yeah, just keep going.
Yeah. So Farmstead Meatsmith is our business that my wife and I run, and we're kind of find ourselves trying to bring restoring husbandry to prosperity. Prosperity is kind of this thing where we think we get to have great things without doing any good work, mm-hmm. and which is contrary to virtue,
right?
And it's not doesn't taste as good. It's not the good life. And so we started raising pigs and growing, having a garden. Mm-hmm. And kind of found that that is a blessed way to be insofar as you can do some of that. And that was kind of actually, we kind of started that journey to the land, to growing things, was actually simultaneous with our conversion to the Catholic Church. They were...
Coincidental?
One move.
Related or...
You know, I think they were related.
Yeah.
I'm going to get that whole story, hopefully, later. Mm-hmm. But as I look back upon it, I realize that we were being drawn to the goodness of God through the abundance of His creation.
Sweet.
Through His earth.
So when you say you harvest animals,
mm-hmm.
What you do is kind of unique, I think. You go, you're like mobile.
Yes. Yes, I have a truck. I have mm-hmm. a truck that has a box on it with a crane. And by harvest, we definitely mean kill.
Right.
And so I can harvest animals on their home turf. I can go to small farms throughout my region, kill the animal there, rather than, and thereby spare them the stress of transportation, mm-hmm. which is highly difficult, especially
the
for
animal.
Small farms.
You mean the animal?
Yeah,
the
right.
The animal.
Yeah, loading them into trailers and they don't like it.
Right.
And new places and faces and smells. Mm-hmm. And I can just do it there and then bring it back to my shop. After the animal is skinned or depilated, dehaired in the case of a pig. Mm-hmm. And then I practice traditional butchery, whereby literally the yield of the body of that animal is 100%, which is not a thing that happens anymore at all.
Right, yeah.
It's usually of the hanging weight, which we regard as the edible part of the animal, mm-hmm. basically the bones and the muscle tissue. That's what meat means most of the time. The yield from that is usually 50%, depending on the animal.
Mm-hmm.
So half of the carcass is just not...
It
doesn't make it to the kitchen.
At a modern
yeah.
a modern place, it's about 50%.
That's right.
Okay.
Well, yeah, and that's just convention. That's just how it's done.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look back to an age when people were less wasteful with their livestock... By necessity, they harvested 100%. And come to find out, when you go full speed ahead on that kind of thrifty, saving everything, using everything, that kind of necessity gives birth to the most extravagantly delicious things we consume as human beings. Like,
yeah.
That's what prosciutto is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's what
right.
cured meat is.
I remember last episode you were on with us, you mentioned the burden of abundance.
Yeah.
And when you said that, I was like, ooh, that's not something that I've
yeah.
really thought of. I mean, that's not something that I have thought about very much of because, you know, when you're in the city, you just go buy only what you need, not necessarily
right.
what...
Yeah, or developing a taste for something means
yeah.
you're going to learn to like it. You might like bacon. But
yeah.
do you like bacon 3 times a day for all
right.
winter, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you find that there's actually a virtue of eating. Like, it, you know, it doesn't just happen
uh-huh.
by accident. If you just go ahead and follow your appetite for sweet and savory, you know, and don't think about it too much.
Which I tell you, I like to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we all do.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of us does.
I like dark chocolate on command.
Yeah. There you go. But the thing about that is that you are missing out.
You turn into a weak man.
You do. It makes yeah. you effeminate, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It does.
Thank
yeah.
you.
Thank
That's
you.
That's me. You're right. I'm going to go eat my feelings after this episode is over.
Yeah.
Well, it's just like acquiring any taste. Like, you didn't like whiskey.
Sure, right.
When you
or,
were...
Or coffee.
Whenever you
yeah.
were. Yeah.
I remember when you said you didn't like coffee in the...
Did you liked coffee the first time you tried it?
Yes.
Oh.
In fact,
wow.
I was
that's unique.
No, I think
I was
most
about 8 years old, and my dad wouldn't let me drink coffee because he thought that the caffeine would stunt my growth.
Right.
And I think that has been dispelled.
It's been disproven.
Yeah.
I don't think that there are things that stunt your growth. I don't think. I don't know.
Death definitely stunts your growth.
It does.
Death will stunt your growth.
Yes.
Yeah.
Malnutrition.
Malnutrition will stunt your
right.
growth.
Right. Yeah, but those are
not enough bacon.
Negative things. You know, even death is really the lack of something. It's
but
not,
I,
it's
but
not,
I, we compromised and I was able to have cappuccino.
Okay.
Okay, so.
Just mostly milk.
Well, cappuccino, like, I used to have kids' coffee when I was a kid.
I wanted the coffee.
Yeah, but I liked, you know, you put milk and sugar into coffee. It tastes like chocolate milk. Delicious.
Yeah.
But black coffee, no, I thought it was gross.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started off like a lot of people, loading it up.
We should.
But yeah, so
let's try this.
What we're drinking tonight.
I've already tried it, to be honest.
Yes, we're drinking Heaven's Door.
Knocking on it, even.
Yeah, so this is a double barrel. It says double barrel whiskey. It's an American whiskey. I don't know if it's a bourbon, technically. I was a little skeptical about it when I got it. It was recommended to me by the guy at the liquor store. I get skeptical about whiskeys that have celebrity, you know, like
endorsements.
Right. So this is Bob Dylan's whiskey.
Hmm.
That's why it's called Heaven's Door.
Right.
I've had the song stuck in my head all day now.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, I thought it was pretty good.
It almost tastes at the back end. Almost is like it has a rye taste to it. I mean, it has this, mm-hmm. this mm-hmm. dark or this like cracked pepper, even white peppercorn at the end.
Yeah, it's a little toasty. It's kind of nice. It's not not overly sweet.
It is toasty.
Yeah. Does it have anything? Does it have tasting nuts on there?
That's what I was looking
Official
for.
Official tasting nuts. You get honey. You get the oak on the nose. Which is a very traditional kind of bourbon style. Mm-hmm.
So it says it's comprised of three different whiskeys. The double barrel
Whoa.
Finishing process utilizes hand-toasted new American oak barrels for a secondary aging worthy of another year's weight. It's got a higher proof, so with a perfect balance. It says perfect balance.
It is high. Is it?
Let's see
it
what
does,
it says.
It's something, 50-something, probably.
Yeah.
It's 100 proof.
Yeah.
50, okay.
It's 50%.
Yeah, but it's a nice, it's not too aggressive until the aggression happens at the end.
Yeah.
And which is nice.
Yeah, and it's $50.
Yeah.
Hey, that's not bad.
You know, so that's, I like that.
Yeah.
So.
It's affordable, you know?
It is.
Not everything is affordable.
No.
What if you had a burden of abundance of whiskey?
Ooh.
Then moderation has to be
absolutely
really
essential.
Absolutely essential.
Is Bob Dylan still alive?
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to say, because there's a quote on here from him.
Yeah.
It's like, he's still alive, right?
Yes. Yes. Fun fact, when I was dating Haley, I took her to a Bob Dylan concert.
Really?
Here in Tulsa. Yeah. So, we're here with Brendan Sheard, Farmstead Meatsmith. You looked at me like I was wrong.
No.
Oh. Okay,
no.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles. Here with Adam Minahan and Mr. Brandon Sheard. Are you a doctor? Are you a doctor? You're not a doctor.
No, not even close.
Not even close.
No.
Mr. Brandon Sheard, then.
Yeah.
We are talking about
eating
animals and killing them, which I think most people in America have never killed an animal.
Mm-hmm. Not being aware of it. I would say...
Yeah.
Yeah. That's an interesting thing. I think a lot of people are, as Ned Flanders would say, mer-diddly-erdlers. They have they've killed things. And they're only able to indulge in the fantasy of their harmlessness by being ignorant of the fact that they have.
Ah. So when I turned 16, I got my driver's license. This is like on my way home from the DMV. And there's a cemetery right by my parents' house that has been there. It predated the road. And so the road kind of swerves. It like curves around it.
Yeah.
And so I'm coming around this curve and I see this little turtle in the road. And I tried to swerve to miss the turtle. But I just got my license. I didn't have a good feel of where the tires were, you know, and I swerved into the turtle and just killed it.
Was that turtle moving too fast for you?
And I just, I would
devastated,
I, like thump thump, and I went, no, I'm so sorry. I did, like it really.
Yeah,
I felt so bad, and I told that turtle, even though he's dead. Turtle's gone.
Yeah.
But I said, I tried to save your life, bro, and I accidentally killed you. I don't think that probably wasn't the first thing I killed, but
yeah,
it was the first memory I have of
carrying
an animal.
It's interesting how those memories are very vivid. Mm-hmm. They're very, I remember the first time I had to put down a dog. That was not fun.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a very,
yeah.
I mean, that was the first time I really killed an animal, like intentionally killed an animal.
Yeah.
And it is something that it's etched into your memory.
Yeah. I mean, you look at, it's almost like that was illustrated or built into some of the Old Testament sacrificial system. The lamb that you would slaughter, you knew that lamb. And you were supposed to put your hand on it.
Yeah.
When its life was taken, when its throat was cut. It's definitely an encounter with reality.
Mm-hmm. So I have this theory that the lamb, God made sheep strictly as an analogy. It's just other animals, you know, served other purposes. Sheep are just for an analogy because they're the perfect. I mean, that's why I think God uses them all the time that way.
Yeah.
I mean, for him, just the way they will sit there and just let you kill them.
Yeah.
And also, just their behaviors, you know, when they're in the herd, if the shepherd is there, they basically don't care about anything. The wolf can be right there, and they just don't even care because the shepherd's there. Otherwise, they're ridiculously skittish, you know.
They do know the shepherd's voice.
Right.
It is amazing. They will follow a voice they recognize.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and when it comes to harvesting sheep, to actually delivering the kill to them, It's tricky, but you have to reduce their panic, their tendency to flight, which is what they want to do.
Right.
They want to flee because you generally mean predator unless you're the shepherd that they recognize. And you have to actually have a due regard for their nature as fleeing animals. And so part of the strategy to harvesting a sheep peacefully is to prevent flight. If you can keep their body in a small corral so that they cannot flee, they will not freak. So,
and they'll just let you kill them.
Well, if you got to handle them properly the whole time.
Uh-huh.
No chasing. So if you can't control their body, then you can't control their mind. They have their mind is it's a reaction to their body more than it is like us with our intellect, more than it is a preconceived notion of, oh no, I perceive danger coming, ergo I'm going to panic and take flight. It's more like I have a flight distance, and anything that gets close to me, I'm going to flee from. And then when I find myself fleeing, then I will be panicking. The physical comes first.
Right.
Yeah. They have that material soul, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, so one of the things that I love about the, among many things in the Diocese of Tulsa in eastern Oklahoma, is we have what's known as the Alcuin Institute. If you just Google the Alcuin Institute, their website will pop up. And they are the hosts for this weekend, brought you in.
Yes.
Why is it important for the Alcuin Institute to bring you in to teach guys how to harvest a lamb? Like, why is that? I understand bringing in a Catholic theologian to talk about what, you know, a Catholic topic. Why is this important?
Yeah, I think that the ultimate answer is because of the immortality of the soul. but we could build up to that.
Okay.
But
okay.
I think that's the theory I'm working
on.
Are you
Quentin Tarantino-ing the answer to this? I mean, is it like...
Oh, he does that. Huh? It's not going to have as good dialogue.
Okay. But, that's all right.
Yeah. But what
that's our fault. Not
we're going to kill two lambs tomorrow.
Okay.
With a bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also going to consume lots of lamb meat tomorrow. To round out the purpose, the end of the harvest itself, which is to feed people. And it's going to be great. A lot of it is just so that people can learn how to harvest their own food rather than being dependent upon a system that provides it for them in exchange for money. It's actually also Martinmas.
Yes, I was going to ask you if it was.
Yeah, we're coming up on it. I think the Feast of St. Martin is actually the 11th.
Of November?
Yes, okay. Of this month. But historically, back before refrigeration, when the seasons governed when people harvested their food and ate things, the liturgical calendar was how we marked the harvesting of things.
Right.
So... St. Andrew's Day, November 30th, in lots of places in Europe, is start killing the pigs. Because in the northern hemisphere, it's a refrigerator outside.
Right.
So you don't need a walk-in cooler. Mm-hmm. It's perfect timing. And
would they still have to salt the pork?
They would, but it's not entirely necessary if it's a refrigerator outside.
Yeah.
I mean, eventually everything will even spoil in the refrigerator. Uh-huh. But, it just stays nice and cool. This is the perfect time of year.
Mm-hmm.
But they would always salt because they were looking to preserve things until the apocalypse, or they eat them.
Right.
And they're all gone, whichever comes first.
Whichever comes first.
That was the goal. But, the Feast of St. Martin was also, and the octave, was traditionally the time when you harvested the animals, particularly geese and pigs, and even cows. And so it's even like a saying, you know, everyone has their Martinmas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there
it's
are
a
like
memento mori.
Little nursery rhymes I've heard about Martinmas and slaughtering animals, and
it's the time.
I can't remember any of them, but I know that they exist.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Talk a little bit. What are we going to be doing tomorrow? We're going to kill two sheep.
Yeah.
When we show up, there will be sheep.
There will be sheep, and they will be alive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we're going to harvest them with just a knife.
Okay.
And I'll show everyone how to do that. And we're actually going to get them into a position where they are passive and really calm. And then we're going to skin them. We have to remove the pelt.
After they're dead.
After they're dead.
Yeah.
That is correct. Okay. And there's a trick to skinning them in a clean and artful way.
Okay.
You know, the whole process can be elevated to the degree of an art form because it improves the yield. If you have your ends figured out, like a good yield, and not just in terms of quantity, like, oh, we didn't waste any meat, but it's qualitative, too. Things will actually taste
mm-hmm.
way better. And so we're going to skin the lamb, and then we're going to remove the guts, and we're going to cook up the liver, the kidneys, the heart right away for a little dish called Slaughter Day Fry.
Okay, so last year...
Which I think we did last year.
We did. We cooked... Last year we slaughtered a pig, and we cooked the liver mm-hmm. and the heart. And I will tell you, I did not like it. It was my first tasting.
Uh-huh.
So, it's a different...
Yeah.
It's different.
Tis.
I'm going to try it again. Texturally. I'm going to try it again.
That's good, because you just lack the habit.
Right.
Of offal eating.
I don't like it. This is a pet peeve of mine, when people won't eat stuff because they don't like it.
Yeah.
That bothers me. Yeah. Like, do you think it's going to hurt you? You know, it's not going to hurt you. Just eat the food, okay? It's on your plate. Put it in your mouth.
Yeah, it's a little bit of that burden of abundance thing. Like, it does taste good. You just don't know it yet.
Mm-hmm.
It is acquired.
I can totally see that.
And they do, you know, I can't remember the specific details, but they do studies on people. And you can acquire a taste. It takes about 2 weeks.
Really?
Yeah, you can pretty much like anything whatever. If you eat it for 2 weeks, and then you'll be good. And then you've acquired a new appetite for a thing that you thought was gross,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah, so I mean, cigars, they're I think on their face, they're gross. I mean, there's nothing delicious or good about a cigar, but for mm-hmm. some reason, I really like them,
yeah.
you know? I just learned to do that.
There but you go.
In the beginning, you think... Why am I doing this? Like, this is killing me, probably. But it's not.
Yeah.
Not right away.
There's always a reward for developing a virtue, mm-hmm. right? It actually has like this built-in gratification when you mix the discipline in.
So one thing that really blew my mind about the pig that we slaughtered last year was how fundamental it was to the kitchen. Mm-hmm. You know, there would almost be no culinary arts without the pig. Is the lamb similar in any way? I mean, does it have essential functionality? And we'll have to wait until the other side of this break to answer this question.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Because I was curious. That's what we chose to slaughter.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
You're listening to The Catholic Man Show with Adam Minahan and David Niles. We're here with Brandon Sheard. We're drinking Heaven's Door Bob Dylan whiskey. We'll be right back.
This segment of The Catholic Man Show is brought to you by The Catholic Woodworker. Go to thecatholicwoodworker.com for heirloom quality home altars, crucifixes, and rosaries.
It's also the only place where you can get the official rosary of The Catholic Man Show. Type in promo code TCMS for 10% off all purchases. TCMS for The Catholic Man Show. CatholicWoodworker.com.
Say that that is the tradition that we have tended to inherit in the United States, coming from, you know, our Northern European and even Mediterranean being populated by those areas and those traditions. Whereas you go further north, you get to lamb territory. So like, like in Nordic cultures, sheep is more like the bedrock, and fish, mm-hmm. you know. And so while we regard the pig as this incredibly flexible, absolutely essential, you know, part of the kitchen for even like Middle Eastern, you know, more, people that were needed herding animals that weren't stationary in villages with a pig mm-hmm. in the back, but were moving, those are all sheep culinary traditions.
Yeah. And obviously
and those are big.
The Jewish people, they would have existed without pigs for
that's right
ever.
So sheep was huge, especially earlier, and then when they started going into Northern Europe, it was cold, and so they still needed lots of fat, but the pig was off limits,
right?
So they went goose, and that's where we get a lot of our awesome goose culinary traditions. The what the pig was for the Catholic European, the goose was for
I don't know the Jewish goose. European. I just don't. I do not know the goose.
They are the pigs of the bird world. They're super fat.
Are they?
Yes. They put on a ton of subcutaneous fat right under their skin, and they fatten their livers, which is
I do
part
know about
of how
that,
they migrate.
Where they do that thing that the liberals hate, where they like force feed the ducks or
foie gras.
Something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear it's delicious. I would love to have some.
Tis. Yeah, and you know, I'm sure on industrial scale, force feeding them is not so nice, but I think that's more a result of trying to do 1,000 of them at a time.
Yeah.
But the backyard, you know, geese, the 5 geese that you have, if you raise them, you'll quickly see that actually it's very possible to do it humanely. It's actually built in. It's how they prepare for migration, to not have mm-hmm. to land to constantly snack on their way.
I mean, most animals would love to just gorge themselves all the time. I mean,
yeah, you know, yes, they to an extent. Mm-hmm. They also they do not have the vice of gluttony.
Sure.
So it actually has to be overridden by human interference.
Okay.
So they will never, I guess certain, well, that even that's a result of human interference. Certain pigs are genetically disposed to being obese. So if you feed them just whatever they want to eat, whenever they want to eat it, they will become morbidly obese. But that's because we bred them to do that a while ago.
It looks like pigs always become morbidly obese, like from just
an unprofessional
I, like myself, you know, I look at pigs and I say, I think you have a problem.
You know, yeah, it's actually, I have to say, on the whole, fat pigs are in the extreme minority.
Really?
Yeah. Once you get inside.
Interesting.
Yeah. Because we don't want to eat fat anymore. Mm-hmm. Particularly pork fat got a really bad name.
Right.
When they wanted to sell more vegetable oils. So they anathematized all pork fat.
Right.
Because that's what people were using as shortening for their pie crusts was pork lard.
Delicious.
Makes the best pie in the cosmos.
Right.
And so they were valued for their fat, but that is out of style. So it's actually the leaner pigs are much more common.
Okay. So the lamb.
The lamb.
How is it that the lamb is essential to the kitchen in some areas?
Yeah, I mean, the lamb can do many, many things. I guess it depends on which culture that you're looking at, but
in sick chops.
Yeah, I mean,
a lot of people don't like lamb chops.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people don't like lamb. It's unfortunate. It's another acquired taste thing. What happens when you just follow your appetites and don't actually try to acquire a taste is that you settle for bland. You go bland.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird? You wouldn't think it, but you do. You go totally bland, such right. that lamb is harder for people to like, and then mutton is, like, inconceivable. Nobody wants mutton. It has such a bad name, which is terrible because mutton is objectively more delicious than lamb.
Okay, so tell me, what is the difference between mutton and lamb?
So a lamb is a sheep that's younger than a year.
No kidding.
Yeah, very young. And that's probably what we're going to have tomorrow.
So an older lamb is more delicious than a younger lamb? Because isn't it usually the other way, where the younger version of the animal is more delicious?
Not necessarily. It depends on what you mean by delicious. Like if it's
More tender, maybe?
It's tender.
People, so are they
so younger maybe? Animals are tender. It's a textural thing only. As far as flavor, they're actually bland by comparison.
Interesting.
So like the best cows in the world are 11 years old. The best beef I've ever eaten was an 11-year-old Jersey dairy cow.
No kidding.
By flavor. You know, the yield by any commercial metric was abysmal. Takes too long to raise them, but the flavor, it's almost like another animal. It's like eating caramelized butter. It's so good, which I guess is what caramel is.
Have I ever had caramelized butter? I don't know.
That's what caramel is. That was redundant. Yeah, it was so delicious. It was sweet and buttery and nutty. But same thing with mutton. You get more fat. One thing you get with age is more flavor and more fat.
I agree with that. So, I have experienced that myself.
Yeah, mutton will do that for you.
Okay. Okay. And I think a lot of times people don't like lamb because they don't like mint. Or, you know, they don't like what is commonly served with lamb. Like, Adam, you're not a big mint guy.
Not a big mint guy.
Yeah.
But 2 weeks, 2 weeks from now, you could be a mint guy.
Yeah. If I ate mint chocolate chip ice cream, which is objectively bad, but
I agree with that statement.
Yeah. Do you?
Yes.
I can't do mint chocolate chip.
No.
Why? Why would you do that to chocolate chip?
It's delicious.
That's what I've been trying to say for like 2.5 years that we've been on this show. Yeah. But
it's delicious. I mean, I'm not against regular chocolate chip.
Okay, but here's the question.
I don't discriminate. You guys,
if you
guys
like to eat toothpaste, I understand. Yeah. But.
All right, you guys can finish this episode without me.
That is exactly what I said. Okay,
so you know what? But I do like to eat toothpaste.
Speaking of mint, though, bitter herbs. Like, not only is that common with lamb, that's historical. That's what they had to eat to pass over lamb.
I was going
to
say God made them do it.
Yeah, so. Bitter herbs, and you can't break any of the bones.
Right.
So you got to joint the lamb with artful butchery or cook the thing whole.
Yeah, and did you know that when they would cook it, they would literally crucify the lambs?
Cordero al asador.
Yeah. So, like, when Jesus was walking around Jerusalem on the Passover, there were, they think, like, 2 million lambs were slaughtered in just, like, a couple days. Mm-hmm. And they're all walking around with all these crucified lambs cooking over the fire. Mm-hmm. It's just very intentional. God is, he knows what he's doing, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, sidebar.
That is the best way to cook a lamb. I mean, in terms of low kit, simple, that's what cowboys do. Like, mm-hmm. when you're out and you're living on the range with the flock for an entire season, you eat lamb and you roast it on an iron cross over a fire. And all you need is salt.
Does the iron, does that make a difference, whether it's iron or...
You could use wood as long as you don't set it on fire.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, steel.
So does the... I don't think about sheep being particularly fat. Are they fatty?
It depends on the breed and, again, the age. So they will... And what they eat. They can get extraordinarily fat. The longer they live, the more high-carb stuff they eat, they will become very fat indeed.
I will say that the big benefit of a sheep is that you can make clothes, where you cannot really make clothes with a pig.
Yeah.
I don't know that you can't make clothes out of a pig.
You can make pretty good leather out of pigskin. I think it tastes better, though. So the highest and best use of pigskin is crispy pork rinds on your Boston shoulder,
right.
Boston butt, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And gloves are, they're one step down from that. They're less delicious. But you can make leather from pigskin.
I will tell you that last year I came home with some of the trotters. I gave them to Juan. I didn't know what to do with them.
Ah, yeah.
So, it was beyond me, you know? I had to just know thyself. Mm-hmm. I looked at me. I did a honest assessment, and I said, Juan,
you have these.
You need these. So he took them home.
Yeah, and I think that actually, you only needed to know three things. One thing for that. That's how to braise.
Okay.
There's really three recipes for all meat. I don't know if we talked about this last night.
Yeah.
But that's, if you know how to braise, pan fry, and roast, I argue that not only can you cook every piece of a four-legged beast, or two-legged for that matter, but you are well on your way to being able to harvest them. Because the point is to be able to butcher them and harvest them for the braising, the pan frying, and the roasting. Not for the deli case, not to look good in the butcher shop, not to fetch a higher price and get a better margin. It's for the kitchen.
Where does the Instant Pot fit into the braising, roasting, pan frying?
That is a modern version of braising.
Is it?
But I've never actually used one, so I'm actually kind of going off there. But does it have a lid?
It's a pressure
low
cooker.
Heat pressure cooker. Yeah. Actually, they were doing that in the 14th century.
Yeah, it's not
Can you
new.
Believe that?
It's not a new thing. Now we have microchips that can regulate.
Yeah.
It used to be very hard to do. You had to sit there and babysit it.
Yeah.
And hope the fire up, a bomb
up and down. Yeah. Hope it didn't blow up on you. That the blacksmith who made it knew what they were doing.
Right.
And,
jugged hair was a way they would cook that in England. With
jugged hair?
Jugged hair.
That does not sound good.
Yeah. Hair as in relative of the rabbit.
The rabbit.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Not what I initially thought.
Yeah. But that's a braise. Instant pots are braisers.
Okay.
When we get back, I want to talk to you about how your profession has affected or had more bonds with you and your children. Like, what is that? Like, how has that affected your family?
Okay.
Because I could see killing animals. Like, that could be a little intense for kids at times. So,
you would think.
That. Yeah.
You would think.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan. We have our special guest today, Mr. Brandon Sheard, all the way from Washington State. You live on an island.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's cool. No bridges, just ferries.
Puget Sound?
In the Puget Sound, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We don't have many sounds here in Oklahoma.
We don't have one either, actually. It's technically not a sound.
What is
it's
a sound?
It's a total misnomer.
What's
I don't
a
know
sound?
Why they call it that. We have a very large bay with lots of islands in it.
What is a sound? I don't even know.
What is a sound? I don't know either. I just know the Puget Sound is not a sound.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a thing.
It's a big lie.
It's a big lie.
You live on a big lie.
It sounds nice.
Yeah. It does sound nice. I see what you did there.
It's an inlet. It's a bay. Yeah.
Okay. But it is an island.
Sounds
it is. I am on an island indeed.
It's not, that part's not a lie.
Right.
Okay. So, Adam, you had a good question.
Thank you.
I also want to hear the answer to it.
Yeah, so how does your role, your profession play and affect your family, especially your kids? Is there bonding moments that are, like, what was it like to be like, okay, Johnny, here you go. Come with me as I go kill this pig.
Because I think a lot of people would say, you shouldn't have, like, don't expose your kids to that. You know, like, which that's something, ruining them or something.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ruining your children?
Only by God's help, I don't think so. They're pretty awesome. I have three sons and four daughters, And I started with the three sons. And so Wallace, Johnny, we do have a Johnny, and Simon. Wow.
When you say that you started them, are they also your oldest?
Or? That's what I mean.
Okay.
Yes, the first three boys.
I didn't
boys.
Know if they were just like, oh, I brought them into the business right. first, you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so they're, and my oldest is 11.
Okay.
And I found out pretty early. Maybe it's because I have very bold children, very bold sons.
I like that.
Courageous, good boys, yes. That being turned off or afraid of slaughter has to be learned. So that's something you teach your kids. Mm. If they just witness it, totally normal to them.
Right.
In fact, I'm usually the
really?
One like, let's dial it down, boys, just a little bit. So, yeah, they... like, you know, I was shooting pigs with Wallace, you know, on my back and an Ergo baby. Probably shouldn't say that in public, but whatever. That's what was happening. Mm-hmm. So he saw the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's hypothetically. That's
hypothetically.
What you were,
yeah. That could have happened,
yeah,
right?
Right. I mean, just for instance.
Yeah. And he, you know, being a... he was probably in this hypothetical situation, one and a half, and he's also a really early talker and... gets all the situations around him, and he was always like, go, shoot, like, go.
Calm down, I gotta wait.
Take the shot.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah, you remember the intensity of like, because you don't want to shoot a pig unless it's perfect.
Yeah.
So you settle to wait.
So many people, what you said, that the only thing harder than shooting a pig once is shooting it only twice.
That's right. Yeah. Right. So there's no such thing as waiting too long to get that perfect shot.
Right.
Because anything other than a perfect kill is... absolutely horrible. It's a disaster.
It's a bloodbath.
Yeah, yeah, it's really bad. So, yeah, they are completely hip to that. They've never been weirded out by it.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe, you know, one of my daughters might have sort of appeared to be sad once when we harvested our pig. But for them, because they haven't been cultured to learn to be turned off by animal death, they do not regard it as a contradiction to have affection for their animals and then to kill them and eat them. That's not a problem in their brains. And it might sound weird, but that's actually the reality of the situation.
Right.
Your animals, if you've ever seen this thing called natural death, of a livestock, of an animal, it is the most horrific torture you can put an animal through. It's really bad.
You just mean like if they die of old age?
Die of old age.
Okay.
Yeah. And they used to actually have a person in society that was in charge of taking care of that issue. He was called the knacker. So when people say, I'm knackered, it means you are a dead horse. You died of old age. You're tired. You're done. And you call the knackerman. And he would come and he would take these animals that weren't fit for food. You know, like your ox or your horse, but it that had died at like 15 years old, and turn them into glue and other products. There was the butcher and the knacker.
okay.
Why was I saying that? But because
it's bad if they die of old age.
It's so horrible. They start decomposing while they're still alive.
Oh, that sounds bad.
Because I've been called on to be a knacker a couple times to come out and put, you know, a 13-year-old ewe out of her misery. And it's really horrible. We've lived with these animals for so long that a decisive, timely kill is actually essential to their well-being. So sheep, particularly wool sheep, will grow so much wool that they will die. So you must shear them. You must milk your cow.
They like hair to death?
Yes.
They don't shed. You said,
they don't shed.
Shooting them is the best for their well-being.
It is. It's because we have crafted them and we have ordered them as these domestic partners.
Right.
And such that if we just let them live, it is a grave torture. Like, it's really bad. You have to milk your cow because she produces more milk than her calf can.
Let me ask you this question, because I believe your state just passed something with assisted suicide. It was Oregon. Washington and Oregon.
I get confused too.
Yeah, they're just like, whatever. You guys are doing, you're chilling with each other and
doing crazy
you're buds.
Yeah.
Okay, so what about the argument that someone would make applying that logic to a human being?
Mm-hmm.
And what would you say to them?
That's where we get the immortality of the soul.
Okay.
After all. Yeah. I think that, you know, I don't know how I specifically answer that person. Depends on where they're coming from. But it would not be difficult to prove that livestock lack an intellect and will.
Mm-hmm.
They lack that, which we regard as signs of the soul. the image of God. And such that we do actually make this very brazen, we act in this very brazen way as compared to other earthly beings, that we dare to take the life of an animal and say it is good and just that your life should be taken to support mine. Mm-hmm. That objective matter should be turned into subjective matter in me. And that is a really interesting hierarchy in the order of being that we all, except for vegans, but I would say even they do it and they don't know it, but that we all consent to. And that hierarchy ends with God. He's at the top. And so it's...
Because Aquinas talks about, you know, the soul animates the body. Mm-hmm. And there's so anything that's alive has a soul.
That's right.
Which is something that is very interesting. When I was reading this, I was like, wow, that is not... I never thought about a plant soul.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Or something like... That was a new concept for me when I was reading this, right? So everything has a soul, but the thing...
The question is, do viruses have a soul? That's one thing I've wondered, because they're not really alive.
We don't even classify them as living.
Yeah, they're not alive. But
well, do they reproduce?
They do.
Do they grow?
Well,
and do they
define
grow.
Like they don't
grow?
What are the three powers of all living things?
They're single. They're
nutrition. They have three powers. They can intake nutrition. They can reproduce and they can grow. Those are the three.
Growing is a little bit. Because they're single, they're not cells. They're not single-celled organisms.
Mm-hmm.
But let's just use that as an analogy. A single-celled organism doesn't grow; it just multiplies. So reproduction and growth are the same.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
So I think it has both powers.
It's cells
if viruses
divide.
Do that.
Typically, we think about growth as cellular division.
Yeah.
You know. That type of thriving. Anyway, it's a little bit off topic.
Welcome to the Catholic Biology Show.
I wanted to ask you a follow-up question.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking about your kids and just being very acquainted with death.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me like that would actually increase their awareness of the dignity of the person, not decrease it.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
I think that's true. I hope it's true. Yeah, I think that what they see is... I think it does two things. It does increase their knowledge of the dignity of the person, just like that hierarchy.
People are
that's
not
implicit
animals.
In it. Right. We're totally not. We're totally different. But it also makes them duly acquainted with the cost of their existence, the cost of their being, which is easy to forget, you know, when everything's paved and mowed and you can kind of float around like a disembodied mind in an urban setting and think that maybe you don't cost the world anything
because you recycle.
That, yeah. And that is kind of a pernicious fantasy that that can be kind of dangerous. But when you harvest a pig, you think, I can't believe I just went through all of that so I could eat bacon. It's a lot of work. You realize.
Yeah, it is a lot of work.
Yeah, and to say nothing of the raising of the
pig. Because, bacon just comes from the store. You just go buy it.
Right.
Right, that's how you get it.
It just pops out. It's amazing.
Yeah,
and the thing is that you're worth the cost. You know, like...
That's the implicit value system.
You need to know that this is what you cost, and that every single person on the planet... There is this cost, and that is you're worth it, and so much more. Your value is infinite, and I think that's important to understand. And this is why the Alcuin Institute brings you in, I think, because there's a fundamental
born in a full circle.
There's a fundamental this is what I do. I sidebar, but I also bring it back.
There you go.
There's a fundamental something fundamental that happens with just being in touch with reality. Mm. That's one of the missions of the Alcuin Institute is to experience reality in all its glory.
Mm-hmm.
And this is real. This is something very real. The store is fake. You know, even though you're buying real bacon, it's something artificial.
Yeah, it hides the process.
Yeah.
It obfuscates things.
You separate the meat from the animal, kind of.
Yeah. From the sentient being.
Right, exactly.
Brandon, if people want to know more, you have a podcast. It is called
A Meatsmith Harvest. FarmsteadMeatsmith.com is our website, and we even have an online membership where we teach people how to harvest stuff. and how to cook stuff and to do all of it in your backyard.
Sweet. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.
Finding someone on an online Catholic dating site shouldn't be like shopping for a blender. So why do most dating sites leave you feeling like you're shopping for a spouse? At Catholic Singles, we connect members through our unique user polls and activities, which help you discover other members and their personalities and interests. Because you're a person, not a profile picture. So stop shopping and start discerning. Trust your love story to the original Catholic dating site and use the promo code BREADBOX at checkout for 20% off at CatholicSingles.com.